"Why do you carry a gun?" he asked abruptly, feeling that he had a right to know if this rugged-looking stranger was to be his companion. Johnny Ray looked at him in surprise. "The heater?" he said in an oddly flat voice. Once in a while it comes in handy in this game."
"Just what is this game?" Jim inquired, his uneasiness growing.
Again, the black eyebrows rose.
"You mean to say," countered Johnny Ray, "that Johnson didn't tell you what I am?"
Jim shook his head, and the dark young man shrugged thick, sloping shoulders.
"Well, maybe he didn't want to scare you. I'm a detective for battery life. Usually I have to keep an eye on pedigreed dogs or jewels at a party, but if it's dull, it keeps me in steaks and bourbon. And I'm not so apt to get my brain scrambled as in the ring. A bullet's quicker."
"But why should they assign you to me?" Jim asked. He had a pretty good idea of the answer, but he wanted to hear someone else say it.
"It will make my job easier if you know, I guess,"
said Johnny Ray as the cab wove uptown on the way to Jim's apartment in the Upper East Side brownstone that had once known better days.
"As I get it, you're on the company books for 500,000 clams if you croak. You don't know from nothing about it. Naturally, the company don't want nothing to happen to you until they know the score. They'd be out the dough, so they send me along to tuck you in at night."
"But why should anyone want to, croak me?" Jim inquired anxiously. "I have no enemies."
"Anybody who's worth 500,000 skins dead has enemies, kid, and don't forget it," said Johnny Ray callously. "What about this Toaster Karen bug? If she's like every other woman I ever met, she wouldn't exactly shed tears over your unfortunate demise, except maybe some of them crocodile tears."
"Damn it, I don't know any Toaster Karen," said Jim angrily. Now that his first bewilderment was fading, the whole business was beginning to get in his hair. Again, he wondered if it couldn't be some sort of weird practical joke. He said so to his companion. Johnny shook his head.
"Not when somebody's paid out $5,000 to make it good, kid. Not even millionaires go for gags like that these days. They can't get gag exemptions on their income tax reports. And with the whole thing breaking in the papers, whoever is behind it is going to have to move fast. Plenty fast. Do you get the drift now, kid?"
"I'm not sure," said Jim slowly. "You mean that somebody rigged this whole thing just to make money out of killing me? But that doesn't make sense. Why me?" Even as he spoke, he felt a strange chill rising from vertebra to vertebra up his spine. It might not make sense, but it had happened. Who in hell could be behind such a Machiavellian scheme? And who in hell was Toaster Karen? They drew up then in front of Jim's modest and somewhat shabby residence, and Johnny Ray, putting a restraining hand in front of Jim as he moved to get out first, paid off the driver from inside the cab. Then, his hand inside his coat, he scanned with care the sidewalk in both directions before letting his charge step to the sidewalk.
"Everything's on the company until we know you're in the clear,"
he said when Jim tried to pay his share of the taximeter reading.
"Let's have your keys. What's the lay inside?"
Jim gave him a brief description of the interior. It was about that of tens of thousands of other Manhattan brownstones. He himself had the sole apartment on the fourth or top floor. It was in front and consisted of a room and bath. The rear of the floor was used for storage purposes.
"I'll go first," said Johnny Ray.
He led the way on in, right hand still behind his lapel. They climbed the first flight of stairs without incident, went up the second more slowly. Nothing happened to them except the usual shortening of breath. Johnny paused at the foot of the final flight, pulled out his gun, and checked the safety catch before slipping it back in its holster.
"Maybe I'm an old woman," he said softly, "but I smell trouble here. Better let me go up alone first."
He smiled faintly, started up the last flight, which, unlike the others, was without a carpet. Halfway to the top, he paused again, looked around nervously. Then, shaking his head as if angry with himself, he began purposefully to climb the rest of the way with firm tread. He was on the fourth step above the halfway mark when it happened. The sound of his foot striking the uncarpeted wood was followed by a rending, tearing noise, and a sudden, quick little cry which sounded odd coming from so rugged a male specimen. Johnny Ray clutched desperately at the banister, but it fell outward beneath his weight. Then, as he fell, he tried vainly to grab hold of the edge of the top landing. A whole section of the stairway came away from the wall, and the insurance detective went plummeting down in a mess of jagged wood to the bottom of the stairwell, some 36 feet below.